Thank you, Mr. Speaker, sir. When I listen to the member for Miku South, sir, I thought I was passing near the Nashville Palace and it was an oldie goldie's dance. But sir, we have serious business to do and I will attend to that accordingly. First, Mr. Speaker, I wish to support the estimates presented by the Honourable Prime Minister and the Minister for Finance. Indeed, sir, we have come a long way. I can recall the early days of the Labour government taking on the challenge of managing an economy in serious decline, to the period of marginal growth, the period when the Prime Minister stated that the economy was in transition, and then he was sorry for making that statement, to growth of 3.1% in 2003, to 4% in 2004, 5.4% in 2005, and the projections for 2006, 6.6%. Very conservative projections for 2006, 6.6%. Ceteris paribus. This is no fluke, Mr. Speaker. This is the result of hard work. Indeed, sir, from recovery to expansion, as entitled by the Prime Minister. This is about sound economic management and visionary leadership by the Labour government under the astute leadership of the Honourable Dr. Kenny P. Arnold. Mr. Speaker, the unemployment rate is the lowest ever since the commencement of the monitoring of this very key statistic since 1992, 15.7%. All of this has been attained, Mr. Speaker, despite the shifting fortunes of our banana industry. All of this has been accomplished in a stable industrial relations environment. All of this has been accomplished without facing any major fractures in the economy or facing the dreaded IMF, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there's someone who I wish to quote, and it's a journal of the ACP countries called SCORE. And sir, it will be a document. I will circulate the copy. And there's a question that was posed, Mr. Speaker, and I want you to listen to that question posed by that publication and decide whether this Labour government has managed this economy well. And the question goes by, EU trade preferences have long been crucial to ACP countries operating on the margins of the world economy. But recent changes in trading rules now threaten the banana and sugar industries and the small-scale producers who rely on them. Can they find new openings to fill the gap? Mr. Speaker, you have listened to the Prime Minister's address. You perhaps have read the text in full yesterday. You may have read for yourself the Social and Economic Review. And what did you see, Mr. Speaker? $1 billion economy, Mr. Speaker. Astounding. And how did we fill that gap referred to in the question? How did we fill that gap? The Inland Revenue collected the taxes, $554.6 million. The Customs and Excise collected their taxes, $326.4 million. $1.04 billion in deposits at the banks, Mr. Speaker. The question is, Mr. Speaker, is how did we fill that gap in that question that was posed? Because we had to diversify our economies. How were we able to achieve this milestone with increased fuel prices and the subsidization of fuel at the pumps of 19 cents per gallon? And importantly, for all the households, in St. Lucia of subsidizing the 25-pound cylinder of LPG gas by $14.75 for the solar. How can we accomplish that, Mr. Speaker?
Well,
I must support this bill, sir. When I see the allocations to support the pilot program for UHC, that is the universal health care, and the pilot program for diabetic and hypertensive patients, the removal of the consumption tax on chicken farms, and the reduction to 5% on baby pampers, Mr. Speaker. I must support that budget, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I am even more delighted at the proposal to acquire rented settlements around the Castries Basin to be rationalized so that proudly we can make the citizens of the Castries Basin very proud, Mr. Speaker. That we can undertake the urban renewal of Castries City and the upgrade of the water supply. Never mind what is being said on the other side. Mr. Speaker, the residents and the constituents I represent in this honorable house, Mr. Speaker, in Swanville, in Cedars, in Guamatat, in Mondedor, in Star City, in Skate Town, in Kaweli, in Lakwiri, all around the place, Mr. Speaker, we'll be so happy when this project is through so that when we have another dry season, we will not be going through the problems that we are going through today, Mr. Speaker. We have to deal with it, Mr. Speaker. We cannot leave it for tomorrow. We have to deal with it now. Mr. Speaker, we continue to respond to the call of the artists that perform and the performing arts can be undertaken as private sector enterprises. And so we have provided microfinancing for entertainers, plus numerous concessions for recording artists. You see, Mr. Speaker, this Labour Party government is not in the business of banning calypsos or denying them a place, denying Calypsonians a place to keep a show. That's not what we are into, Mr. Speaker. What we are into, Mr. Speaker, is to give these people opportunities to earn a living and to be part of this $1 billion economy. That is what we are about. This is a budget which offers opportunities, Mr. Speaker, for our youth. $3.72 million to the National Skills Development Center in my constituency in BZ, Mr. Speaker. And I look forward to the provision for the youth in the Castries North constituency so that we can partake in the other $2 million for the YAP program, which will be targeting 700 youth. A stipend of $400 for training per month, Mr. Speaker. Good government, Mr. Speaker. Then we see the investment in the rural sector of 1.5 million. And Mr. Speaker, yes, we are a government that looks after the city, we look after the town, we look after the villages, we look after the countryside, Mr. Speaker. No more Siberia, Mr. Speaker. You are the honorable member for Ansari and Canaries telling you how his village, his villages were neglected during the days when the Labour Party represented those villages and the UWP was in government. They called it Siberia. We're not into that. If you go around the place, Mr. Speaker, in the Mauya Valley, you will see the extent of the road network that we have in the valley and the most bridges ever built in St. Lucia in the Mauya Valley. And the Labour Party is not representing the Mauya Valley, Mr. Speaker. You can go to Miku South and Miku North as we speak. There's a police station and a fire station taking place. And we haven't discriminated against the people because we are a government for all the people of St. Lucia. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, today it is difficult for you to distinguish between town and village and country, Mr. Speaker, because you could see the inequalities in and around the countryside, Mr. Speaker, because this government looks after all the people. There's street lighting everywhere, people have access to electricity. This gadget, Mr. Speaker, you often might have to put some of us out for. Everybody on the street has two or three of those, Mr. Speaker. The government of the St. Lucia Labour Party that put these things in there, Mr. Speaker. So we are looking after the senior citizens and the construction of a new citizen's home in Beaufort. And Mr. Speaker, the support for those people who are being neglected to repair their homes and the good work of the Ministry of Health through the Department of Human Services, ably headed by the Honorable Stanley John Odlum. We are looking after our old people, Mr. Speaker. And I must support this estimate, Mr. Speaker, because this is a budget that was delivered by a Prime Minister who understands the philosophy of bread, justice, and freedom for all, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will take a little time to deal with. Is he the Shadow Minister for Agriculture? Mr. Speaker, I heard, well, he's a shadow. We're speaking about the eviction of farmers in his constituency. Mr. Speaker, I must blow my own trumpet, Mr. Speaker, blow my own trumpet, because I don't know any other Minister of Agriculture who goes out in the field and meet the farmers and talk to them. I'm not afraid of going out and meet the farmers. I have been up in the hills in Deriso and in Calypso, and in Degate, where that problem is supposed to be. We met with the farmers along with the Forestry Department, and we sat down, we discussed the issues, and that matter is resolved. So I don't know what the Honourable Member is speaking about, Mr. Speaker. I don't know. No, there were the efforts, Mr. Speaker. Don't come and talk about efforts, because the matter is resolved. If there was no resolution in the matter, then you would raise it. But that has been resolved. Because I have met with the farmers, I told them exactly how it would handle. And it has been handled. We have dealt with it. And Stabex money, Mr. Speaker. I will tell you about Stabex money. Mr. Speaker, again from Sport, which is an ACT paper, and it says that noting the notorious delays involving accessing EU funds, the European Research Office observes that the ACT negotiators would do well to push for early, timely, and effective delivery of assistance of national restructuring and or diversification programs. And it is the same thing you will find, Mr. Speaker, in the document by the Prime Minister, the Honourable Prime Minister, when he said to us on Tuesday night, no, I'm coming to that. On Tuesday night, our Prime Minister, we don't hide our business, you know. This is the business of the people, and we tell you. We said that on the capital account, Mr. Speaker, capital grants declined from a low base of 6 million to 4.2 million, reflecting the delayed implementation of new and revised procedures by the European Commission for accessing and spending grant funding. If we had received the money to build the roads, I would have been the happiest Minister of Agriculture in the world, Mr. Speaker. I am still struggling to access those EU funds because it takes an inordinate delay in getting those funds. Our Prime Minister just last December was across in Barbados to meet the head of delegation, Ambassador Tinkani, and we are trying everything that we possibly can. We had to spend some $15 million last year. We have not been able to access those funds, so our farmers would be happy, of course. But we have not received those funds, so we could not build the roads under those funding. And if you utilize your own funds, your own resources to do that, you will not be repaid, you will not be refunded. So you have to bid the time and get it. And you go around the ACT countries, we all are going through the similar problems. The EU promised us things, but it's taking a long time to deliver because of the bureaucracy. So please, my friend, I have always invited you to come across to the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and we can chat, sir. And if you wish, sir, you have access to my telephone and we can chat about those matters. But don't do these things. Don't mislead the public. Mr. Speaker, let us go down the road to subsidies. You know, Mr. Speaker, why are we talking about subsidies in agriculture, sir? It is all right to sit back, and that's why I told you I really believe that it was a back-in-time dance or something was going on, Mr. Speaker.
That's right.
Mr. Speaker, the UWP government, when they were in office, signed on to the WTO agreement and never asked for any derogations. They never asked for any derogations, like Barbados did, so that they are able to put certain restrictions and controls and do certain things. We cannot do those because we did not request that, neither within CARICOM nor at the WTO level. So the trading environment has changed dramatically, and we are still doing a lot of things to protect our farmers. We just last year in this Honourable House, and if you read the estimates presented by the Honourable Prime Minister last year, you will have read where we launched a new agricultural incentives regime. And that is well in effect. And a little later down, Mr. Speaker, I will go into more details of the agricultural incentive regime. Then, sir, we heard about, what was it about fish? Mr. Speaker, fish catches. Last year, sir, you know about La Nina and El Nino, this phenomena? Mr. Speaker, those have effects on the marine resources. Our fishermen do not go out to do longline fishing. We are assisted by putting out the FADs, fish aggregating devices. Those have assisted our farmers, our fishers tremendously. But traditionally, our farmers do not have, they do not want to go out into deep sea fishing. So if we do not have the migratory fish in our territory, we cannot catch them. So necessarily, we had a decline in fish catches last year. And so it would follow because of the changing climatic conditions. Simple as that. And Mr. Speaker, this year, we have serious problems now managing the catches because we are overwhelmed by the catches that we have in this year. And we are doing our best. And the Honourable Member for Mikko North was earlier today saying that we were not purchasing the fish from the fishers. That is not true, Mr. Speaker, because I am aware of the work that the St. Lucia Fish Marketing Corporation are doing to manage that situation. There was a meeting about three Saturdays ago at the Daito in Denry to discuss those issues with the Fish Marketing Corporation. And there was a subsequent meeting in Miku Village with all the leaders in the fishery sector, that is the representatives of the cooperatives, to discuss those issues. So do not come into this honorable house. This is an honorable house, Mr. Speaker. It is an honorable house. Do not come in this honorable house and to attempt to mislead the Speaker. On pig farmers and poultry farmers, Mr. Speaker, our government has given so much assistance to our pig farmers and poultry farmers. We have reserved a 40% market share for our producers, for pig producers, 20% market share for the poultry producers, in addition to all the incentives, to all the incentives that we are giving. And we continue to work with those people to ensure the sustainability of livelihoods, because we are concerned, and I am concerned, Mr. Speaker, about the sustainability of the livelihoods of rural people. Mr. Speaker, you know, you listen to these people on the honourable members on the opposite side, Mr. Speaker, and then, Mr. Speaker, we hear the raging debate about whether we have in tourism or whether we have in agriculture, and Kenny Chwe Agriculture. Yes. Mais moi et tout, Monsieur Speaker, ça, Premier ministre là, en 1994, budget address by the Honorable Prime Minister of St. Lucia, John G. M. Compton, 1994, that is from hands up. Another raging debate in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, I quote, is the issue of all-inclusive hotels. We in St. Lucia must realize that this is the worldwide trend and we cannot buck it. In spite of all the incentives offered in St. Lucia for hotel development, only one major hotel has been constructed in the past 20 years. St. Lucia needs the hotel rooms to supplement our threatened banana industry. Listen again, Mr. Speaker. St. Lucia needs the hotel rooms to supplement our threatened banana industry. George Melvin Compton said so. In this honorable house, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you,
Mr. St. Lucia needs the foreign investment to supplement our efforts. The question which we must answer is whether St. Lucians want foreign investment and whether St. Lucia is in a position to dictate the terms of foreign investment. We hear quite a lot, particularly from those who are comfortably up, about selling our birthright. Who is talking about that out there, Mr. Speaker? About selling our birthright. The 3,000 or so children who leave school every year also have a birthright to get a job in the country of their birth. And if local investment cannot meet this need, the government has a responsibility to these children to attract the necessary capital so that they can use their talents and get a job in their own country. From this responsibility, government will not flinch. And in this, we have the support of the vast majority of the people. There were over 4,000 applicants for 275 jobs in an all-inclusive hotel that is the subject of so much criticism and debate. And today, this is John George Melvin Thompson, who signed his job in Lucia 1994, April 1994. And today, that's your leader, said so, in this honorable house. And you are coming here today, Mr. Speaker. The honorable members here coming here today and saying about unemployment and foreigners taking over the country. Complicity, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker.
No.
Mr. Speaker, that's not all. Because they spoke about foreigners, Mr. Speaker. Foreigners. Page 2. 99, April 15th, 1991. John, the Honorable, the Right Honorable John George Melvin Thompson, Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Planning and Development, at the fifth session of the fifth Parliament of St. Lucia on Monday, 15th, April 1991. And hear what he had to say on foreigners. Mr. Speaker, I didn't start. Do you want to go back in time, Mr. Speaker? Let's go back in time. The burden of our own development, I quote Mr. Speaker on page 2, the burden of our own development is now squarely upon our shoulders. If we claim the privilege of being St. Lucians, we must also accept the responsibility which that privilege brings. We cannot be told to hate foreigners, but yet continue to be dependent upon foreign aid and foreign investment. The time has come for us to embrace and put into practice the attitudes and norms of behavior which will advance our country and not retard it. To do this, there must be the discipline, honesty, efficiency, tolerance, and regard for others, responsibility in family life, the willingness to make sacrifices to educate our children, and the increasing productivity for a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. Mr. Speaker, that was the Prime Minister of St. Lucia, the leader, the now leader, the reincarnated leader, who is trying to get reincarnated into this house, and that won't happen, said so about foreigners. But he is out there, and he has his... No, I wouldn't use say so about the honourable members on the other side, sir. But the honourable members on the other side must do their homework, go and read, do the research, do the history. That is what your leader said. And don't come in this house and fool the people of St. Lucia. You see, Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to... Mr. Speaker, now, Mr. Speaker, we're going on to banana industry, Mr. Speaker. The nostalgia of the banana industry continues on the benches of the opposition. It has become an annual ritual in this honorable house by those opposite to reminisce on the days of green gold. They continue to live in the past. Yes, Mr. Speaker, we on this side of the honorable house, we have walked in from the past, we live in the present, and we are now leading our people into the future, Mr. Speaker. It is difficult to believe that after continuous explanations of the market environment, that some people are yet to comprehend the issues, Mr. Speaker. Again, I say, stop the gimmick. Let us deal with the facts and the science of growing and marketing bananas in St. Lucia. I therefore will crave your indulgence, sir, to give an update on the market situation for the benefit, not of my colleagues on this side, sir, because these colleagues of mine read and they follow international events and they know what's taking place in the market environment. But I dare to bore them with this, but for your education and to make it elusively clear on the other side. You will recall, Mr. Speaker, that during last year's presentation, I referred to the then impending proposal by the European Union to set a tariff-only regime for the ACP bananas. Notwithstanding all the lobbying efforts, of our friends in the European Union and other allies around the world. The European Union had its way at the 6th WTO Ministerial Conference in Hong Kong last December. The new regime came into force in January 2006. All the most favored nations suppliers, that is the suppliers from South and Central America, may sell unrestricted amounts of bananas to the European Union market at a rate of 176 euros per ton. The ACP countries have been granted a 750,000 tons duty-free quota. But the Latin Americans have not taken this lightly, Mr. Speaker. At the dispute settlement board in January, at the January session this year, Honduras argued that the European Union 176 tariff per ton discriminated against non-ACP exporters, reminding the WTO members that its US 704 per capita GDP was lower than that of the 32 ACP countries. Nicaragua charged that the new tariff had been designed to protect the preferential margin of subsidized European Union producers in the Canary Islands and the French overseas territories of Guadeloupe and Martinique. Panama and the US questioned whether the new regime would maintain pre-2006 market access for most favored nation suppliers and expressed concern about the maintenance of the duty-free ACP quota. Mr. Speaker, despite the changes from the 1st of January this year, the European Union banana regime continues to be contentious. Certain issues that can determine our ability to sell bananas and the prices received are still being contested. I refer to the maneuvering within the European Union for a first-come, first-served system to replace the historical basis for licensing ACP bananas, which is being complicated by recent legal action. There are also the current attempts by the Latin Americans to force a WTO review of the import arrangements. In parallel, some of the Latin Americans are pursuing an initiative for the voluntary limitation of exports. Whilst our market intelligence has little confidence in the last approach, Mr. Speaker, it nonetheless is one that we need to follow closely and, as necessary, participate in so as to ensure that our interests will not be jeopardized should that plan ever materialize. Mr. Speaker, again, you know, in 1991, Mr. Speaker, the then Prime Minister again said that the task for our farmers is to produce the fruit of the quality of market demands and leave the rest to a government which they know trust and all will be well. But Mr. Speaker, that's not how people do business. This is 2006. All cannot just be well by sitting there and say the government will look, get their friends and they have trust and so on and things. You heard what I told you, Mr. Speaker, about what is taking place in Europe and the fierce battles that are taking place for access in those markets, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the fruit trade journals, the Banana News tells you about the winners and losers and what is taking place. You have the Fresh Plaza tell you about the people from fruit from Guatemala getting into the market. You have Fresh Plaza again, Wednesday the 19th of April 2006. And you have bananas coming out of Mexico now, right, into that market. So all that is additional competition that we are getting to. And it is not Kenny Anthony that is lowering the price in the UK, sir. The banana competition increases. Fresh fruit info, Friday the 21st of April. This is current information, right? Changes in the European Union banana regime on January 1 are bringing new operators into the fiercely competitive market. Guatemala, which has not supplied the European Union for several years since the licensing system was introduced, made its re-entry last week with the arrival of a reefer green Malloy in Rotterdam to discharge 113,712 boxes. Those are the challenges that we face. And then you have Reefer Trends, another international bulletin. There are forecasts that if banana exports and not hit by La Nina at some stage towards the end of April, the European Union market will weaken significantly and then crash between the mid and end of May. The scale of the losses, if and when they arrive, suffered either by banana producers or distributors, will depend to a large extent on the relative strength of reefer charter market and so on and so on. Mr. Speaker, that's the reality of the market. You think any Minister of Agriculture would want to come here and to be representing the interests of farmers in St. Lucia and to sit here and see that our farmers lose business? This is not what is taking place. So I want to inform the honourable members opposite to disabuse their minds of these things and to tell the farmers the truth. Mr. Speaker, last year, again we reported on the fierce market rivalries in the UK. Here's an update for those who believe that their friends will look after them, will look after us. On the 16th of March this year, Asda, that is a supermarket in the UK, drastically reduced their retail price of loose bananas from 85 pence per kilo to 64 pence per kilo, a drop of 24.7%. Tesco and Sainsbury's immediately follow suit. This development, which is part of an ongoing price war among the multiple supermarkets, took the price of bananas to a new low. This is the latest price. This latest price, Mr. Speaker, of 64 pence per kilo is the lowest price ever in the UK market over 30 years, Mr. Speaker. 64 people per pound. That is what the truth is, honourable member for the Mabuya Valley. Mr. Speaker, this development must be put into the context of the recent changes of the European Union banana regime and increasing liberalisation of the banana market. Although it is still too early to come to a definite conclusion of the outcome of the recent changes, so far the results are very discouraging. Compared to the first quarter of 2005, Mr. Speaker, compared to the first quarter of 2005, imports from the dollar area, that is in the Latin American areas, they are called also dollar fruit, have increased despite an overall shortage, as I indicated earlier, of supplies and the 176-ton tariff. For example, Guatemala, which until then hardly supplied any bananas to the European Union, has now started regular direct shipments. ACP suppliers are down, but the situation is not likely to remain so for long. Indeed, the ACP, which we are part of, is being taken up at an increasing rate under the full-scale, full-serve, and the expectation is that the ACP imports will far exceed the quota. Now that is another challenge that we face, because we have countries like the Cameroons and the other African countries who are producing at lower costs, much lower costs than we are, as well as some of the Latin American countries. They are going to take a heavy share of the market away, and that is going to put us into more problems. Most important, average price has fallen by more than 20%, and is continuing to fall, Mr. Speaker. The general view in the trade is that the market conditions will continue to deteriorate, both dollar and ACP supplies will continue to increase, and prices will fall even further. Mr. Speaker, I must commend with DECO for its commitment, and I believe it will continue to do its best in responding to the market dynamics and the competitive pressures that come with it. But we in St. Lucia and in the Windwards need to understand these market dynamics and to respond appropriately. And that goes for my friends on the other side, Mr. Speaker. Otherwise, if we continue to talk a lot of these things that we're saying, we will just imperil the industry, Mr. Speaker. We must speak the truth in here. The banana is the most important line or category in the supermarket business. And the current level of price reduction can cost them millions of pounds in reduced profit. Therefore, why do they have to react to the move by Asda, which is now leading the supermarket groups? Asda is in first place, No, Tesco's is in first place, Sainsbury's in second place, and Asda is in third place. Now, Asda is owned by Walmart, the big American group. And they are now retaliating by cutting the prices on all products like bread, milk, and these basic items, as well as bananas, because they want to retain market share. That is what is taking place in the market, sir. And because of this, it is putting additional pressure on our farmers in the subcontinent. Fortunately, Mr. Speaker, with DECO intelligence reports that most of the value-added tax, like fair trade, have not been affected by the price debacle. However, the price gap between fair trade and conventional loose bananas has significantly widened, and so there is a real danger that if the reduction is sustained, it could eventually drag down the price of the fair trade bananas to the long-term detriment of the higher-cost fair trade producers like us in the Windward Islands. However, for the time being at least, this development is seen as an opportunity for WIPDECO to fully differentiate its overall offer by adding value in the form of fair trade. Indeed, we have noticed we have no choice now but to convert our entire Windward's production into fair trade. That's correct. Windward Islands bananas simply cannot be sold in the market at the current conventional loose price. This latest price development would have been the final blow to the banana industry in the Windward Islands had it not been for the Fair Trade Initiative, Mr. Speaker. Windward Islands bananas are sold to most multiple supermarkets in the UK. That is to say, sir, Sainsbury's, Tesco's, Asda, Waitrose, Marks & Spencer, virtually all under the fair trade label. In some of them, WIPDECO has been able to secure exclusivity of Windward Islands fair trade supplies and to grow that category in those accounts. The sale of fair trade bananas has achieved a phenomenal growth in the last few years and has the potential to grow even further as consumers turn increasingly to ethically produced goods. Fair trade not only provides a better price to the producers, there is also what we call a social premium component, which is paid over and above the producer price, intended for the community projects, so that the Fair Trade Association, the Situation National Fair Trade Association, in addition to the price that they get, perhaps about another dollar per pound, in which they have to put into the social for social activity. And what has been done, the various groupings utilize that to put in bus shelters, to assist the schools in their communities, to assist the communities generally with projects. And you should know that, Honourable Member for Miku South, and Honourable Member for the Marbia Valley, Denry North. Those are the things that are taking place. The annual remittances and social premiums to St. Lucia National Fair Trade Association and throughout the Windward Islands are currently running at $4 million in the case of St. Lucia and $8.5 million respectively. That is in the Windward Islands generally. WIPDECO is the premier supplier of fair trade bananas in the UK. The company is the largest supplier of bananas to Sainsbury's, the UK's second largest supermarket. This in turn makes Sainsbury's the largest buyer of bananas, Windward's bananas, and currently WIPDECO supplies the bulk of the value-added packs into Sainsbury's, including all the small bananas and 75% of the fair trade bananas in the UK market. So that, and WIPDECO supplements its offer with supplies from the Dominican Republic. And here again, Mr. Speaker, we are treated via the media to the most irresponsible statements by, again, the one who ought to know better and who I quoted earlier, and another one who ought to have better visual faculties, but perhaps he may not be sufficiently qualified to attend to his own myopia. And those who are desperately clutching on any straw for the reincarnation into this Honourable House, Mr. Speaker, that's what they're doing. It is the type of irresponsibility and political opportunism, Mr. Speaker, that will not help our cause. and I will stand in this house and defend with Deco on those issues this time. I will do that, Mr. Speaker, because the decision to trade with the Dominican Republic, Mr. Speaker, has helped to buffer the industry from other shocks and other losses. It has assisted in offsetting losses that we otherwise would have incurred owing to our low and erratic production in the Windward Islands. When last, Mr. Speaker, did you hear the phenomenon of dead freight from Wibeco? In the old days of green gold, Mr. Speaker, the vessels would come here to the Windwards and we would pay for space that we did not utilize. And that was called dead freight because you pay for the space. If you use it, well, so be it. But if you don't use it, you still have to pay for empty space. Now, notwithstanding our low production, we have not had to face the high cost of paying for space on the vessel, which we did not utilize. And notwithstanding, Mr. Speaker, the increased price of fuel, which has upped the price of freight, we continue to enjoy those benefits because of that trade with the Dominican Republic. So, Mr. Speaker, Wibeco has seen the need to plow, well, I should say, Mr. Speaker, that last year, again, Wibeco reported profits at its last shareholders meeting. And what has it done with the gains? They have invested it. And again, because we have good government in St. Lucia, and we have very good representatives on the board of directors of Wibeco, who have caused Wibeco to plow some of those gains back into the industry. That is all the millions that you all are saying that we just spending money and putting money and you're not seeing what is happening. I'm telling you, Mr. Speaker, that notwithstanding our production went down to 30,000 tons, we are still able to give the farmers tremendous benefits. So that, as we speak, Mr. Speaker, the farmers are gaining some 80%, they've gotten a subsidy of 80% of the cost of fertilizers, Mr. Speaker, because Wibeco has plowed money back into the industry. And I can give you a little more detail on that, Mr. Speaker, that Wibeco, the fertilizers for St. Lucia, 16,290 bags, of which 15,820 bags will be partitioned based on criteria as set out in the agreements with the various banana companies. And the fertilizers were ordered and have been shipped. I think farmers have started getting them. And there are three shipments to come, with comprising of 11 containers. Each will contain 5,170 bags. And five containers will be delivered to ODSA IRBC and six to the Lakai IRBC in your constituency, Honorable Member for Denry North, Mr. Speaker. That is what is taking place. And Mr. Speaker, the Wibeco again, leaf spot control again, Mr. Speaker. I listened to the members opposite talking about leaf spot control. And one, we have taken the initiative to support the farmers. They go again telling you about mismanagement and so on. You will recall, Mr. Speaker, when our government about 4 years ago, led by the Honorable Senator Calix George, insisted that the industry, there was need for the industry to contribute to what he then dubbed the common inescapable essential services to the banana industry, and the consequences which followed because we did not heed that advice from the then minister. At last, Wibeco has taken the decision to manage leaf spot control on St. Lucia. A helicopter will be purchased by Wibeco, and they will also supply the oil and fungicides required. Farmer contribution will now be 1.5 cents per farm, and Wibeco will contribute 1.5 cents. That is a reduction of 1.5 cents to the farmer, and of course, the provision of a more reliable and efficient service. Savia Dean, Mr. Speaker, ki Wibeco, fair profit, if he bought that, qui kawem les affaires sur la ni même gouvernement ni même ces différentes associations et qui ont déjà fait une décision pour attendre ces propices à l'aéroport pour venir mettre à l'industrie pour supporter ces femmes. malgré qui production nous tellement pas, nous a fait un contribution, fait pour ça, mettre l'argent à dans le sueur. Et pour baisser pour quantité de café pour sel, et puis pour mettre l'argent pour s'acheter un hélicoptère, et puis pour produire l'huile là, et l'autre bitin au cuisin pour s'acheter plus vite. Et tout ça qui va faire. Mais moi, je suis un cas de monde à Soulaoui qui veut entrer en vivant qu'il y a ici. Quand je fais ma chance de voir là, et que je garde tout ça, je veux, manière de voir à son effort de radio. Mais le gouvernement nous travaille et nous continuons à supporter planter nous en Saint-Christ. Monsieur le Speaker, I must return to the issue of fair trade. Fair trade, Mr. Speaker, is our last best chance for survival on the European Union market. And earlier I indicated that the demand for fair trade bananas was growing at a phenomenal rate. If we are to meet this demand, we must work expeditiously to convert all our production to fair trade. In our quest to convert to fair trade, Mr. Speaker, we are aware that the compliance with fair trade practices is a major challenge in the short term. And our government and my ministry remains committed to supporting the environmental objectives of the fair trade policy, since it complements our own agricultural sector policy objectives. The Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has been very involved, Mr. Speaker, in encouraging farmers to adapt to UFGAP compliance and other fair trade practices. Indeed, over the years, the Ministry of Agriculture has provided assistance through our agricultural officers, whether it be through the Bureau and the other extension advisory services. I crave your indulgence, Mr. Speaker, to salute the pioneers at WINFA, the Windward Islands Farmers Association, and our own national fair trade organization, St. Lucia Inc., for their vision and their perseverance at standing up to the challenge of change, for having taken the bold initiative of going fair trade, the fair trade route, and today it is this fair trade which some at some time previously that certain major players in the industry did not want to hear about. This is what is going to save our industry today, and I want the members opposite to take that, put it in their pipe, and smoke it, Mr.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Thank you. Take it in half.
Mr. Speaker, on irrigation and with DECO again, the Prime Minister in his presentation on page 38 announced that an amount of 1.4 million had been allocated to fund on-farm irrigation. And the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the Bureau and the Banana Industry Trust Fund will partner with DECO on this project. There can certainly be no agriculture, Mr. Speaker, without water. We have invested heavily in irrigation with support of the European Union Special Framework of Assistance Funds, and over $20 million has been invested at Roseau, Cul-de-Sac, and Canela. And I am aware that the farmers at Markey await anxiously for this service, that is the off-farm irrigation, and then our government has put in $1.4 million to assist in getting the on-farm irrigation to the farmers so that they can become more efficient. And Mr. Speaker, I do not believe that I will have to move heaven and hell to quote a friend of mine, so as this is work in progress, and which I will ensure that the Banana Industry Trust Fund delivers on time, as they always do, Mr. Speaker, in ensuring that the farmers of Markey Estate will get their irrigation services. So, my very cosa, Daniel Lott, your $0.4 million, qui premier ministre, j'ai placé ça en budget là, pour nous servir pour irrigation. Pour ça, c'est mon qui, yo ça connecte à la société de l'eau qui gouvernement j'ai placé en Roseau, en Cul-de-Sac, en Canel. Et puis après ça, nous voulons mener de l'eau ça là aussi, pas ici planté à Machi. Et puis moi, ça qui yo ka espéré pour un chaitan, et moi, je voulais faire confiance là, qui Ministry you can provide the fee, banana industry trust la quoi si we keep your delivery as a former salah, equity for Markaisa, Sevitlo Salah, you want to learn on the Kawem. Mr. Speaker, this is the work of a government that has not rested on its laurels and said, don't worry, and our friends will look after us. We have taken on the challenge, but we have not abandoned our farmers, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is, the Economist newspaper said, 4 decades after independence, it is hardly surprising that colonial trade patterns are under threat. Caribbean economies do have a future, but a very different one, as service centers, as well as tourism and offshore finance, both of which could expand further. There are plenty of niches. A recent World Bank report noted that almost 70% of overseas medical graduates registered in the United States were trained in the Caribbean's 23 offshore medical schools. Some countries need to help to make the switch from sugar and bananas. Listen to this again, members opposite. Some countries need to help to make the switch from sugar and bananas. But the future need not be sour, provided that the Caribbean's politicians look to embrace it rather than cling to the past. I believe you gentlemen, honorable members, are clinging to the past. You have to walk with the St. Lucia Labour Party and step into the future. Mr. Speaker, I crave your indulgence again, sir. But the future need not be sour, provided that the Caribbean's politicians look to embrace it rather than cling to the past. Mr. Speaker, that is from the Economist newspaper, September 22nd, 2005, Living and Dying on History and Artificial Economic Sweetness. Mr. Speaker, agriculture and tourism linkages. And I listened to my friends opposite, and they were talking about agriculture and tourism, and just putting in depots all around the island, Mr. Speaker. That is not how you do business in this environment as we're in. I have said before, sir, and I'll say again, that diversification of the economy, or agriculture for that matter, is not whether you're going to have agriculture or tourism. These are just two pillars of the economy. It must be agriculture and tourism and manufacturing and financial services, offshore financial services, and offshore medical training and so on.
Right.
And Mr. Speaker, because we have various pillars of the economy. And diversification does not mean that you will chop down all the bananas and you're going to plant mangoes or you're going to go back into a tamarind, sweet tamarinds. You see, Mr. Speaker, this is what has been suggested. And this is why our government have decided we continue to invest and continue to flow money into the banana industry. Because we are not killing the banana industry. We are saying, in addition to bananas, we recognize the challenges that we face with the banana industry, which I've outlined time and time again in this honorable house. And in the region, we see what has happened in Trinidad. Trinidad, with all its oil, they had to shut down Caribbean estate. St. Kitts, with sugar, the challenges they face. I meet my colleague ministers of agriculture all the time, and we go through the same problem. See what has happened in Dominica, sir. Dominica has had to run to the IMF, but St. Lucia has not, Mr. Speaker, because we have a sound minister for finance, aided and supported by other ministers who have a vision, sir. And so we have not gone there, and yet we have been able to have a $1 billion economy, sir. And the facts are there. Go to the bank and see the deposits. It's there, Mr. Speaker. That is not giving. So, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries has been re-examining the daunting issue of agriculture tourism linkage and the mechanisms that can enhance the mutual relationships and benefits to principal partners. In the light of the adjustments to the economy, we need to strengthen the intersectoral linkages as strategic undertaking. to help manage our relative exposure and vulnerability as developing and fragile economies. I have stated before, Mr. Speaker, that our farmers will see the opportunities that are presented within the hospitality sector. We need to have stronger linkages will result to a stronger economy. It is not about us or them. It must be a we thing. And so what you were trying to perpetuate on the other side, and I quoted your leader when he was Prime Minister, what he said about those linkages, about when you talk about foreigners, I read for you, and you must go to the library of the Mr. Speaker. You must go to the clerk's library and read and check out Hansard and read for yourself what your leader said when he was in that seat, Mr. Speaker. That is what the honourable members opposite must do. Do not go and perpetuate this foolishness outside in the public. Mr. Speaker, we recognize that those linkages are critical to maintaining social peace and stability. Hotels trade and farmers trade. Government does not trade. Government creates a conducive environment for this trade to take place. However, not many of our farmers see themselves as private sector. But there must be private sector to private sector dialogue. It does not entail, and this does not entail stem cell science. You know what stem cell science? As these days, it's not about stem, it's about stem cell science. But it does not entail that. And it does not entail rocket science, because rocket science is a thing of the past too. In that regard, the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries continues to collaborate with FAICA, that is the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. We've brought the various parties together. Just last week we met with the president of the St. Lucia Hotel and Tourism Association, with the St. Lucia Air and Seaports Authority representatives, Ministry of Tourism, Ministry of Agriculture, so that we can sit down and dialogue and put things into perspective so that we can make it work. It is not about agriculture or tourism. It is about all of us. There's an opportunity in tourism. We cannot continue to have the banana boat mentality that we're just going to produce and the boat will come and take everything. That time is gone. We have to see the opportunities within the tourism sector so that we can produce, because every morning a tourist, a guest comes in here. They must have breakfast, Mr. Speaker. The way forward requires an urgent study of the demand of the hospitality industry. It is not good enough to say that on average we have 3,000 guests, 3,000 arrivals. And on average those arrivals will consume 3 meals a day, so that will translate to 3 million meals or 9 million meals. That is not
the Honourable Minister has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
I have to drop my hands. All right, give me half.
Mr. Speaker, on the standing order 3210 to enable the Honourable Minister for Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to have an additional 1 hour within which to complete his presentation to this Honourable House.
Honourable Members, the question is that Standing Order 32, Sub-Order 10 be suspended to allow the Honourable Member for Agriculture an additional 1 hour to make his contribution. I now put the question. As many are of that opinion, say aye. As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Minister, leave is granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Honourable Members. Mr. Speaker, the way forward, Mr. Speaker, as I was saying, requires an urgent study of the demand of the hospitality industry. It is not good enough, as I said earlier, that on average, that is for your information, because it must sink in your head, that on average we have 300,000 guests, and that they're going to have 3 meals a day, and it's going to be 9 million meals, Mr. Speaker. The point is that this is not sufficient information that producers can work with. So that AICA has already signed an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, when the Ministers of Agriculture met in St. Kitts last year October, to undertake a study and to make the information available to all. In addition, our newly formed Chamber of Agriculture will work with the hoteliers to provide specifications to local producers. Because the producers need to know what they need to have the information as to what is being consumed on a daily basis when you have the peak periods, and that they can program the production accordingly. This has not been happening. This sector has been largely disorganized. And if someone is operating a tourism plant, they don't want to know this morning that they cannot feed their guests. So you have to know the source of the product. And you don't want your business as a hotelier is to operate a hotel. It's not about running around the place looking who to buy and sell from. So that is why we are looking to organize our structure and restructuring our own marketing work. And you heard in the Prime Minister's presentation that $2 million has been allocated so that the Chamber of Agriculture will work with the Ministry of Agriculture, with the Hotel and Tourism Association and other private sector interests, as well as the St. Lucia Marketing Board, so that we can put the mechanism in place to make that linkage work. That is what it's all about, Mr. Speaker. In all of this, we must remember standards, consistent quality and supply. Today, consumers are very sensitive to quality. The fact that a metropolitan visitor arrives in St. Lucia, a small island, does not mean that this person will expect a lower quality service. And as our Minister for Tourism continues to say, we must always offer world-class service. World-class service, world-class standards. There's nothing as a St. Lucia class, or an America class, or a Beaufort class, or a Marbella class. It is world-class that we're talking about. Not in today's world. We must take health and food safety issues seriously. And our ministry continues to train and certify the farmers. And we have trained over 200 farmers in good agricultural practices so that we facilitate the trade with the hotels and the supermarkets. Because today there is what you call traceability, that you can go back. If something goes wrong anywhere along the food chain, you know what happens. And so you can follow it back to the producer or to the point of production where that you had that problem, and to be able to resolve it. And farmer credit is critical, Mr. Speaker. And I applaud the gesture by the Prime Minister to encourage the financial services sector to lend to agriculture. That is very critical, sir. The biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges that farmers face today is to have easy access to credit. But the financial institutions will also tell you, on the other hand, that the farmers, when had the opportunities, borrowed money from the credit unions. And you are a member of a credit union in the Marbella Valley, you know the challenges. You can go to the Bank of St. Lucia and they will show you the loans portfolio of delinquent loans. It is not about development bank, it is about the rate of delinquencies. You can go to any of the commercial banks there and you would see what happens. So I endorse the proposal by the Honorable Prime Minister to lend, to give the incentives to the financial services sector to lend to the farmers. The other challenge is that of the 30-day credit that the farmers have to face. Now again, it is getting out of the banana boat culture that we were in a tradition of being paid on a weekly basis or fortnightly basis when we sold bananas. So it is a period of transition. It is a period of transition. And people are beginning to understand these challenges of dealing with the hotels, the supermarkets, and other persons in the food business. That generally in business, people get credit. If you're into construction, for example, you would go to a business house and they may give you a line of credit for 30 days. And this is what happens around the place. The hoteliers themselves, the tour operators do not pay them immediately. So we must also understand all of that. But while we appreciate that, a farmer coming out of the tradition of weekly and fortnightly payments does not have the working capital to be able to sustain that long period, that lengthy period before he's paid. And this is why our Prime Minister has made an allocation and put a proposal, so working with the Chamber of Agriculture and the Ministry of Agriculture and the Market Board, to find a way that we can push on that shock and guarantee that credit. This is what we're doing to support the farmers. We listen to our farmers. We know the pain of our farmers. This is what it is all about. So, Mr. Speaker, I move on to another matter which is important again for our visitors in particular and persons who take up residence in St. Lucia. For some time now, Mr. Speaker, we have had some archaic legislation which deals with the importation of pets, particularly cats and dogs, into St. Lucia from countries where rabies is endemic. That is to say, countries with additional risk of rabies. And to protect our borders, there was a period, the regulations as it stands now, and that was since 1956, that if someone was coming out of the United States, for example, with a dog or a cat, they had to send it to the United Kingdom to be retained in quarantine for about 6 months. And that is not practical. Today, with the new technologies of the microchip and so on, that the animals can be permanently identified and have their identities on the microchip, which is inserted under the skin. They have to be vaccinated against rabies, and they must develop, they must be subjected to serological tests. That is, a blood sample is taken to establish that there is adequate immune response and therefore effective protection against the disease. This is to be carried out at an approved diagnostic laboratory. So, what our ministry is seeking to do, as we wait for there's a new veterinary act that's supposed to come to Parliament during this period, but what we're going to do is to, because it's an amendment to the regulations, all we would require, I have been advised, is a statutory instrument to be placed, and then that would follow that the persons wishing to enter the country with those pets, as long as they meet the conditions I asserted earlier, Mr. Speaker, they would be able to do so in the country of origin and would not have to export that pet to the United Kingdom. They would be able to do so in the country of origin, but as long as they would have met the conditions, which is to say the animals are permanently identified with a microchip, they must be vaccinated against rabies, and they must be subjected to the serological tests to establish adequate immune response and therefore effective protection against the disease, that they should be able to enter the country without difficulty. So we will be working on that very shortly, and that will bring some comfort to our many visitors who often have to be turned back from the country because they cannot enter with the pets, or some of those pets have to be put down, as it is said, because they do not meet the conditions. Mr. Speaker, there's a matter which came up in the Prime Minister's address about alternative energy. And I wish to make reference to page 30 to 31 on the initiatives towards energy efficiency and to place it in an agricultural perspective. Many years ago, the Ministry of Agriculture introduced biogas technology to St. Lucia, particularly in the to pig farmers. This technology produces methane from farm animal manure and can be used for cooking and generating electricity through small electric generators. The Ministry of Agriculture, in our incentives regime, also offer incentives for equipment used for producing biogas. So I want farmers to know that our ministry has been part of that process for a long time. The Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is also actively considering and exploring the possibilities for developing biofuels in Indonesia. As you may be aware, Mr. Speaker, Brazil is already a world leader in alternative energy, for example, ethanol and biodiesel. And I am confident, sir, that in the medium term, we should be able to introduce such an initiative in Indonesia. The production of biofuels presents tremendous opportunities for the farmers, advantages for environmental management, so that we can benefit from carbon credits, and for economic development, the reduction in the energy bill, and so even some of the crops that would be grown for producing the oils, when you extract the oils, the byproducts can be used in animal feed and those sorts of initiatives. So this is something our ministry is actively considering and speaking to people about it and see how we can be able to introduce that. So we're not sitting idle and just talking bananas and sweet tamarinds and so on. Mr. Speaker, I look forward to the day when we can combine farming and modern science. And by so doing, we shall join countries like Brazil in using the world's oldest industry to power some of the world's newest technologies. I believe this is a very bold step. I believe that this is a very bold step by the Honorable Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, towards an energy-efficient strategy. There's a Professor Albert Sasson, a world-renowned biotechnologist, who says that the vast majority of developing countries have decided to believe in biotechnology. Many have programs, commissions, strategies, and a vision. And that is the vision that our Prime Ministers have. That is the vision that we also have in the Ministry of Agriculture, to consider those options. Professor Sasson continues to say, in a publication he did, in a presentation he did to AICA some time ago, we already missed the boat of the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century. We have already missed the boat of the personal computer. Let us not miss the boat of biotechnology, because it has to do with living resources, it has to do with genetics, of things that we know, and are property of these countries. We need to develop them and be competitive, because the boats will not stop twice at the same harbor. That is to say, we need to get on the boat now, and that is the vision that Dr. Kenny Anthony, the Prime Minister of Indonesia, has. That is the vision. So, again, I wish to applaud the gesture by the Prime Minister to begin the move in this direction by encouraging the importation of hybrid vehicles. So those who think that this is madness, this is vision, this is what is happening around the world, and this is what we've cushioned. If we begin to work at it now, the effects, the drastic effects that we are facing with the impending challenges of high oil prices. Mr. Speaker, there are other linkages that we must talk about in agriculture, and that's to do with health. And I'm sure, and I listened to the program that we're going to initiate, the pilot program on the pharmaceuticals and universal health care and diabetes and hypertensive patients. Mr. Speaker, a lot of those problems that we face have to do with our consumption patterns, the foods that we eat. And we have abandoned a lot of the foods that we produce in this country. And we at the ministry, I have said so, that until and unless even our farmers begin to make a concerted effort into consuming what we produce, Mr. Speaker, because you will find in a lot of rural communities, we have the grapefruits and we have the oranges and we have the golden apples and all the fresh fruits. But do you know that those same people, when they get the checks from having sold some of their produce, they go to the supermarket and they buy 10 powdered juices rather than consuming what they produce. Moi je suis un homme, Monsieur le Speaker, moi je suis un défi, un femme qui était calé en hôtel, et qui tenait à vous sacré. Et qui dit moi comme ça, ministre, côté nous qu'a joué maquette. Côté nous qu'a joué une maquette pour citer nous, pour grapefruit nous et bagaille comme ça. Et moi je dis comme ça, ouvrez à vous sacré, ça m'a ça au miel. Il dit, qui m'a dit ouvrir à vous sacré? Là, il ouvre un peu sa clé, qui s'en connaît? Ini sisi tahi putela, sweet prince of putela. Egba rai kwa sa ini adai. Me, ika mute a ote, eka ote a ini grapefruit, ini tout kate dan we a subitasyon. Me, ipa kasevi. Po tout se bagay sa la kane koz pon kajwen, isa dou kajwen, strok bagay kwa sa, is dou kasevi, bagay nou menm kakobi. Bon, mwen pali lot eksemp la, kote market la, paske menm fama sa la, I kay plen konen kwet grapefruit epi siton lop, am fritaj menen kay li. Ek se jen moun la bezan, yo pa kay pointan pou fliche ek tiche se bagay sa la pou fe anji. Pis yo kate pa aswa lot moun fey bayo. So toutan sa la, se fritaj la kwa wete la yo kapoui. Person pa kasevi. Men nou kapoui ale achete se ti bagay an boutei la, se ti bagay an kyan la ki sot lot vete. Se sa nou vle, se sa ki ta fe nou a big shot, se sa nou kasevi. Men lese moun an vini lop peyi, yo ka mbate ke, ki manye nou ni tout se kalde bagay sa la, se sa yo vle servi an se hotel la. Ek sa se si natuel. Ek se sa minis sote, kapalea, nou ni pou servi sa nou ka podwi. Tout se yam la nou ka kwe se bagay sa la pa bon. Ek le mwen kapale sa, epi minis edikasyon, ek lande pase, Ve, mwen di birou, dako, nou te kan koumanse an program pou se mamay l'ekol la, sa manje yon fikni tou le jou. Se moun la di, mwen fou. Paske, le ou ve a lunch kit, ki sa ki a lunch kit la? Ini tout kalte pou chan yade. E pou sa, depi apwe mwen koumanse sa, bon lot si men mwen san, Premier ministre en Angleterre, dit qu'on s'est tiré toutes ces bagages à l'école en Angleterre. Puisqu'on est pour bien conserver, consommer, ça y est, bagages naturels dans cette école. Et c'est ça, c'est direction ça là, nous n'y pour point. Tout le temps, faire nous-mêmes pas qu'à servir sans nous qu'à produire. Qui monde qui va acheter? Nous pas à garder pour l'autre pays tout le temps. En disant ici à même, nous n'y pour servir sans nous qu'à produire. Et ça, c'est ça, mon résolution. Mr. Speaker, the cocoa industry, cocoa production, we have seen the decline in cocoa production. And last year, Mr. Speaker, I went to pains explaining the changes that were taking place. Because the traditional way that we collect the statistics for the national income accounting does not factor what happens with agriculture and value added. So when something happens, I will give you an example. For farmers, we have spent huge sums in assisting farmers with rehabilitation of their cocoa plantation, particularly in the southwest of the island. And there's a particular farmer who also has a tourism enterprise, so that the farmers would undertake a tour of the plantation. They visit the cocoa plantation, see the lovely cocoa fruits and how they harvest it. They see how the cocoa is advanced and polished and dried and the whole processing. And at the end of this tour, they probably even have a drink of cocoa tea. Then they go to the gift shop and they buy a cocoa stick for $2.50. US. Now, in national income accounting, it comes up as a tourism product because this is predominantly tourism, but the agriculture part of it gets lost in the chain. So we are now working with AICA so that we will try to do a study of the true value of agriculture to national income account, to GDP, agriculture's true contribution, real contribution to GDP. So this is what we're working on with AICA to do. But the point I was making about the cocoa industry is that there are several farmers who have rehabilitated the fields. And there's a lot of progress that has been made. We have, on the way, there's a business interest called Hotel Chocolat who has purchased the Rabot estate and will be rehabilitating that estate into full cocoa production, from organic production, and eventually, within 3 years, should have a processing plant because they are big into the manufacture of chocolates. So that will be an opportunity for our farmers to trade with this enterprise. So these are the things that we are doing, Mr. Speaker, while people tell you there's nothing going on with diversification. On the livestock side, Mr. Speaker, we have seen significant increases in production within the past few years. And the average number of laying stock, for example, for broilers and layers, we have moved from having 48,000 hens to 57,000 hens, and the industry currently meets domestic market demand. So we are self-sufficient in fresh eggs. And in 2004, 886,000 dozens were produced. Mr. Speaker, the pork industry as well has grown, and we have seen an increase from producing 84,000 kilograms in 2002 to 95,000 kilograms in 2005. And that is primarily because of a lot of the pork cities that we have in Barbonneau and Cul-de-Sac and those areas, Barbonneau in particular. So, Mr. Speaker, things are happening, but it will require a lot of changes, and people must understand that the industry of agriculture will never be what it used to be in the past. So, Mr. Speaker, our government is concerned about the agricultural sector. We will continue to invest in the sector. We will continue to look after the interests of our farmers. And we will ensure that the linkages and the benefits to be derived from the tourism sector will be enjoyed not only by persons directly engaged in the tourism sector, but as well by our farmers. Mr. Speaker, at this time, I am in this house because the people of Kaspis North were good to me in December 2001, sir. And we are again approaching a period when the Prime Minister will seek for a renewal for all of us to be back in here. And I'm not sure, well, some of my colleagues have already declared that they will not be back in here of their own volition. But I know, and there are some others who will find themselves not in this house when next we meet at budget time. Mr. Speaker, Kaspis Grozile Highway will be under construction very shortly, and it is my understanding it is already started. Kaspis Grozile Highway, Mr. Speaker, commences from northwest near the roundabout to the Shop Bridge, and all of this is located in Kaspis North. So it is, I anticipate that the spillovers will have direct impact on the rest of the roads in Macquarie and surround and environment. The implications of the highway expansion will involve land acquisition, pedestrian safety, and that is something that the ministry is very concerned about, and myself, the sidewalks for the children who are coming from school, and the old ladies who have to walk down to the Clary Church, and the pedestrians who go to the supermarkets. We will ensure that we make provision for that along this highway. The overhead bridges, I understand, and the egress into Citygate and the Coconut Grove Avenue, and also near American Drywall and Beezy. However, the major implication will be the diversion of traffic through the Leclerc area, because often what happens at the roundabout, people try to avoid the roundabout and go through Acteville and spawn through to Citygate. So it will necessarily follow that the Ministry of Works will have to improve on the infrastructure through Leclerc, through Acteville, and through to Citygate. And I know definitely that at the summit at Acteville, a lot of work will be undertaken to improve that junction where we have tremendous congestion on an afternoon with minibuses and other commuters who try to avoid the traffic. But I wish to suggest, Mr. Speaker, that there is another alternative that will avoid the traffic getting back into the same problem, albeit at a different point. on the highway near the Texaco station when you come out at Cizigate. But it may be a possibility to consider going through what is called the Rusty Roberts. I think it's on Mr. Felix Natal. Have some property up there, and there's a new residential development which leads right on into Carolee and can avoid you getting through to Oleander Gardens in Carolee. So I believe this is a very good option that should be explored, and then we can improve the road surface in the Acreville area. As well, Mr. Speaker, in Acreville, the Tamarind Heights area, we have already identified a source of funds to undertake the construction of that much needed road, because we had already undertaken the land acquisition. And so we will be attending to that very shortly. That will also, because of the traffic diversion, it will also necessitate the upgrade of the Active Hill Bridge. And I understand that there will be a pedestrian sidewalk on that bridge, complete with railings. So that major works at the Activeville Summit, as I said, will take place, and that then we can then relocate the garbage bins at that point and the standpipe, which caused tremendous congestion for the motorists in that area, Mr. Speaker. A new tolling area will be designated on the route to Citygate, that is near Adol's Garage, so that the minibus will be able to return to the bottom of Activeville. And but discussions will be held with the residents, with the minibus drivers, as to the whole work program that will take place in the Acreville area. So this is welcome news for the residents of Acreville and Castries North in general. I see my colleague from the south is listening attentively, but there are so many highways and dams taking place. Then of course the surfacing of the La Clary lanes, Mr. Speaker. Over 20 years, Mr. Speaker, nothing has happened with those lanes. We only have had some work on two of those lanes. One is complete, and I know that some residents have been calling the talk shows and have been inquiring whether it is only people with BMWs who have their lanes repaired. And so that got some people, a little mad on the talk show, but I'm sure that they are very grateful for getting the lane repaired. But we will continue. I want to assure the residents of La Clary that there will be a program to undertake resurfacing of all the lanes in La Clary so that they will have more comfort. That is, the York Hill Road is another point of major diversion through to Carolee and Beasley, or through the newly constructed road from Carolee to Mondidor. And there's a point along that road where there's a grill which the Ministry of Works have already identified for repair near Nato's, near the Nato's residence. And that corner is extremely hazardous, and I think it will require, and I think the Ministry of Works also considering the possibility of widening that bend to reduce on the risk for motorists along that route. Mr. Speaker, there are so many roads in Castries North. We have the Chase Gardens Road, which above the Thompson Supermarket, which is in a very deplorable condition. Then there's the other section of Chase Gardens heading to the Gatians residence, also in a deplorable condition, although about 3 years ago, the government of St. Lucia had given a grant to the residents for the construction of part of the road in concrete, and we are looking forward to completing the other section. The Carolee, Mr. Speaker, is an expanding residential development, and I guess it is a township of its own, because Carolee, I have estimated or counted about 26 streets in Carolee, more streets than you will find in many of the villages like Choiseul and including the town of Beaufort and Supreme. So we have about 26 streets, and they do need attention. We have been making progress. We have made progress on the road, the Carolee Gardens Road, and the Park Crescent, the Park Road has been resurfaced, And all these roads in Karali, we are trying our best to alleviate some of the challenges for the commuters in the area. One particular point, which is a road under construction, under the supervision of the Ministry of Physical Development, that road, we encountered some difficulties because some of the residents had constructed too close to the road reserve, and also because of the water pipeline running there. This caused some major setbacks, and the Ministry of Physical Development and the consultants, the contractor and myself have met, and we've looked at the options, and very shortly the contractor should be back and complete this section of the road. In Agard, Mr. Speaker, another beautiful community in Castries North, and there are several roads that are to be surfaced, but we have done, there's several side roads at Agard. There's the major ring road which we constructed, that is when I got into office, and the one to the bottom of Agard near Big Brother. But there are some other roads which are not paved at all, and we have to make some progress in addressing those. The naming of the streets, because Agard, people at Agard often refer to Agard as Montmédan. But Agard is a well-developed community, and the residents have met and they have agreed that very shortly they will undertake to name their streets. And the bus shelter will be reinstated. But one of the needs of the community is that of postal services. And we have communicated with the Ministry of Communications Works for the possibility of providing postal services. Today, people from the top of Agard have to collect their mail on the Chaussee Road, and that is not good enough. So we are now in the process of identifying a suitable location for putting in private letterboxes and to provide postal services to the residents. Mr. Speaker, when I was elected in December 2001, the Agard Circular Road and the road to the bottom near Sobers, better known as Big Brother, were barely motorable. Today the roads are properly surfaced, given access to the commuters. However, we have a problem with some of the minibus drivers. Before we had the proper road surface, they complained they couldn't drive down. Now that the road is properly surfaced, and having received an increase in price on the roof, still do not surface the roof properly. We have held several meetings along with the Transport Board, the Minibus Association, and the residents, and still some of the minibus drivers fail to cooperate with the residents. Can you imagine when some of the residents have to leave all the way down near the Balata Bridge, near Collymore, and walk all the way up to Agard Land to catch a bus? This is not fair, and I urge, Mr. Speaker, that something done quickly by the Minibus Association to redress that situation. And Mr. Speaker, you also have children coming out and old women coming out of the Abamon section of the area, and they too have to go through this distress, whether it rains or it's in sunshine, Mr. Speaker. There are still outstanding pipeline issues, particularly at the Bowlands and Marie Lane, where the new water sector reform, we hope, will be able to address that situation, to bring in a proper 4-inch main, and also to put in place fire hydrants in that area. The recreational facilities for the youth and the seniors in Agard Land is in progress. Already Cabinet has approved, and the Ministry of Physical Development Survey Department is already undertaking the process of land acquisition of at least 1 acre of land opposite Ellis Communications for the location of a multi-purpose court and a human resource development center. This is a joint project between the Castries North and Castries East constituencies and the MAPFAM, that is the Montmédan Agard Bocage Feminine Action Movement. The entire area from La Pansé, Montmédan, Agard, etc. do not have a community center, do not have a place where the residents can socialize. So that is something we must have in place. So between Bocage and Castries North, Castries East and Castries North. We will be collaborating with the feminist action movement of the area to see how we can begin the implementation of this project. The original open space at the bottom of AGAT was deemed to be too wet and it would be extremely expensive to drain and put in the necessary retaining walls for us to put in the facility for sports down there. So we are considering on this 1 acre, when the acquisition is complete, to explore the possibility of putting this facility in place. Abamon, Mr. Speaker, I don't know many people know where Abamon is, but the people of Abamon are very happy today because they can drive down to Abamon, and they also have, in December of last year, all the residents at Abamon got connected to Wasco for the first time, Mr. Speaker. And that is very significant. Over 35 households were connected for the first time. And some people tell you that this government does not care about poor people. Mr. Speaker, $110,552 was spent on that project. And we have a new tank holding 50,000 gallon tank near the Ellis communications that will service this route, Mr. Speaker. At Armondale, at Union, the ring road in this community, this is near the forestry department, is in dire need of some repairs, and I have assurances from the technical staff of the Ministry of Works that particularly in the corner near Prince and B&B Quick Printers, the road to B&B Quick Printers, something will be done on that section of the road very expeditiously. Mr. Speaker, Skid Town, many of you will have seen on GIS or on NTN the project known as Mosaic, Management of Soap Stability in Communities. And last year, the Prime Minister had allocated 1.3 million, I believe in the estimates there's another 1.3 million allocated for completion of this project. And Mr. Speaker, that has been a very effective project in helping the communities to appreciate the challenges of managing soap stability and the risk that they face, particularly in those depressed areas which people say we do not look after, Mr. Speaker, all over the Castries Basin, not just in Skid Town and in Star City, but also we have brought over the concept into Touge, Maynard Hill, Bagatelle, and that is people connecting with people. That is the beauty of this project, a bottom-up approach involving a Professor Anderson from the University of Bristol and the technical staff from the various ministries. So we want, and also the project also went to Beaufort Then we got assistance from the Chinese government with the pipes so that we have fitted the households with guttering downpipes and to drain the water and their wastewater into those drains to reduce the amount of water in those areas and to reduce the landslide risk. Also, as part of the package, some 23 households were fitted with those guttering downpipes and water tanks, Mr. Speaker, for free. A government that has a social conscience, a government that cares about the safety of the residents of St. Lucia. And some people tell you only a select few are getting. This government has been looking after everybody, Mr. Speaker. The water problem in the area of Skid Town, Upper Sunbelt, it's a major challenge every year. And so that we look forward again to the project, the water sector reform project, so that when Wasco will be able to bring in this connection of connecting the Ciceron treatment center to Bocage, and that we will end this problem once and for all so that the residents of Sunville, Cedars and Upper Mondidon will not suffer those problems that we have. And in addition, that water hydrants will be put in place when this project is on the table. And the same goes for Star City, better known as Odlam City, also known as Odlam City. And work on the site will continue very shortly. I am told by the PRF that by mid-May, they should resume and complete the section from Blaster to Miss Anne. And during the period of construction, Mr. Speaker, of putting in footpaths drainage, retaining walls. Mr. Speaker, over 30 persons were employed, residents of the community, undertaking the project in what we call community contracting, Mr. Speaker. So that when we have construction is not only taking place in some places, only on the highways, Mr. Speaker. Concrete and steel and cement are going into those communities. The people there are working, they get employed, they get paid, and can help to bring some dignity in those communities, Mr. Speaker. You should have seen, and the Honorable Minister for Social Transformation, when we toured that community in 2002 with the Honorable Prime Minister, people were shocked to see the conditions under which people live. And that's the reason why they call some of these places skate town and so on. Because people literally had to skate in the mud, Mr. Speaker. That has changed. We could not put in a road, because you cannot always put in a road today. But at least you can give the people the comfort and to give them some dignity in their communities. You bring the street lights, you bring the water for them. And one day, when we are better off, we will be able to move in and put in the roads. Also, the Prime Minister has indicated what we're going to do about the Castries Basin, because it's a big problem for people who have been renting lands for over 50 years from City Gate in Leclerc, Activeville, in Guapata, in Skate Town, in Bagatelle, all of those areas, Mr. Speaker. People have been renting those lands. They want to improve their homes. They want to improve the quality of life, but they do not have title to the properties, and the landlords will not sell to them. So what the government is doing about it? The Prime Minister has indicated over a phased period, we will begin the acquisition of those lands. We will get engaged the owners of those properties, sit with them, and get into an acquisition process, and then put it in the hands of the program for the regularization of unplanned development, Mr. Speaker, and to make those residents proud of themselves and proud of their country, Mr. Speaker. This is what our government is doing for our residents. And I will continue working very hard with the Ministry of Physical Development to ensure that we can at least bring some of that into reality for the residents. The Forgotten Boundary Road, Mr. Speaker. Forgotten Boundary. Mr. Speaker, we completed the land acquisition at the Forgotten Boundary some 3 years ago. And now we are trying to do what we can so that we can construct the road. And this road, Mr. Speaker, again, I might have to quote my good friend from Castries East, that I will have to move hell and heaven to ensure that we deliver on that road to Forgotten Boundary. I don't know the formula of moving hell and heaven, but I will speak with my learned colleague and see what we can do about that, Mr. Speaker. Guapata, Mollidor, Mr. Speaker, that entire ring road, and I'm getting into tremendous difficulties with our minibus drivers and motorists and the residents, because the road has completely collapsed. That ring road from Compton Shop through round the island and down the concrete hill, we must do something about it urgently. And I know too that the Ministry of Works, which is located in Castries North, will not let down the Honourable Representative for Castries North, Mr. Speaker. And we will continue in Guapata funding on the Mosaic Drainage Project near Elcock and the Concrete Hill to ensure that, again, the challenges faced by the residents of water running all over those developments, unplanned developments, bringing hazards to the people. And if we do not attend to those problems today, it will cost us much more tomorrow. And that is why we've been proactive. And I hope that under the Mosaic Project, we will be able to attend to that very shortly. The Bezek Quarry, Northrop Quarry, as it is called, for many years, Mr. Speaker, even when you listen to some on the other side saying that they have brought water to everybody in the year 1990, that was not so, Mr. Speaker, because until very recently, until we brought this water supply project to the Bezek Quarry, those persons, many were collecting water from the roof. Unacceptable in the city of Castries, Mr. Speaker. So that has changed, and we had an allocation of $561,770.65 for that project, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the Basic Needs Trust Fund and the Ministry of Social Transformation for making this project a reality. The residents at BC on the summit over the Lac Michel do need a road, but there are also land tenure issues. And again, under this program mentioned by the Prime Minister, we will seek to address that situation and regularize in the tenure and to bring see how we can deal with that situation. We have tried to transform the BC community. Mr. Speaker, in the BC quarry area, for years people were using that site as a dump, as a garbage dump. Anything that they had from construction sites, they went up there and dumped it. That has ceased, Mr. Speaker. If you go to that site today, you will see a lovely building that is a warehouse put in there for the headquarters of the National Emergency Management Organization, NEMO. A lovely site, Mr. Speaker. And along the road, we have been transforming the area into making space available for the National Council for People with Disabilities, the Caspian North Disaster Disaster Group for their satellite warehouse. Space has been allocated for that. And then we have another development. The Salvation Army once had a property which is completely dilapidated and vandalized. And we have already had discussions with Captain Brown of the Salvation Army so that they will be undertaken very shortly to renew that and rehabilitate that property and to bring it into good use for the residents of the BC community. The BC Rapid, Mr. Speaker, again, we have had approval and we had a visit with the Ministry of Finance in February to look at the disaster, that is to do with under the disaster mitigation project, so that we can undertake the construction of the retaining walls along the BC River. And again, because we will have the diversion of traffic during the construction of the highway, and with which the Transport Board has already announced and had meetings with the community to make the entrance to Somersville, to make it a close, as it is said, that is a one way. And it will require the Kentish residents to put some railings along the bridge there because it will add a pedestrian area so that residents will not fall into the ravine because of the two-way traffic. Mr. Speaker, Caspian North, as I said, has many, many, many roads. The Sunny Acres road network, because of a lot of construction taking place, new properties being developed, a lot of the roads have been deteriorating. And from time to time, we have some potholing, but it needs rehabilitation, particularly the road to the back of the SD Academy. And again, the Ministry of Works and the Chief Engineer has done the tours with me and has committed to doing something about those roads. At Coconut Cove and City Gate, because we'll have increased traffic, there are some necessary retaining walls to avoid the complete collapse of those roads onto the residential properties, and as well where we have a challenge with water running across the road. I wish to assure a particular resident through the Coconut Grove City Gate Road that we will attend to that drainage problem very shortly. Nicollet Hill above the La Clary Church. Again, this is another road which desperately needs attention. We have started a project at the bottom of Active Hill, and that is a road going to Bucha, Tina, et al., so that Cabinet has approved for the acquisition of the land so that we can bring that very important access to the residents. We have had some delays on this acquisition, but very shortly, I believe, the Survey Department, as the matter is gazetted, should be able to commence the work. At the Fancy, Mr. Speaker, there was a landslide during the November rains and posed severe risk to the residents. That we have attended to some of it, that is the drainage to remedy the landslide, and again, funds have been identified under the Disaster Mitigation Program for a retaining wall that will be constructed as soon as the the estimates are completed. The ravine foliar, that is a bridge, a pedestrian access bridge we constructed for the residents under the self-help program. That bridge is very important for those residents who once had to traverse a wooden bridge and posed a lot of risk, and some one had already broken a leg going through that area. So we have put in the street light, we put in the footpath bridge. But again, those are persons who are renting from a private person, and those are lands again that we will have to look at under the program. At Somersdale, the road to George near the residence of the late George F.L. Charles, that is work in progress, and I'm urging the contractor and the Ministry of Works to work expeditiously to complete this project. Of course, at Somersdale, we have some residents who have been begging for some speed bumps because of the high speed of the traffic in the area. And I hope that during the construction of the highway, that we may get some spillover of some of the Barber Green so we can put in those speed bumps for the residents. Also at La Marche, near Wayne Cycle Shop and the road to Visual Domain, those residents definitely need some assistance. And again, I know that I'm very confident that during the construction of the highway, we will have some support from the Minister for Works. The Bimbutai Road above American Drywall, after over 15 years of neglect, we have delivered a paved road with proper drainage to the residents of that hill. And I understand that very shortly there will be a naming and opening ceremony, and of which we are very grateful to the Ministry of Works and of course to the parliamentary representative for delivering on his promise. At Lacleri, again, Mr. Speaker, during the period under review, we delivered the much needed sidewalk from the Vipote Road past the Lacleri Church and down to the NRDF, making it safer for pedestrians, particularly the children after school, the secondary school children, and the children of the Vipote Primary School. The lane to the Vipote Primary School, there has been an idea, and we have been working with the Ministry of Works and other agencies to look at the possibility of slabbing over this drain and to put a pedestrian walkway for the children, because it's extremely hazardous along this narrow lane for the children in that area. The rehabilitation of the BBCC multi-purpose court is well underway, and there is tremendous support from the Ministry of Youth and Sports, the National Lotteries Authority, Concrete and Aggregates, and the French Mission for Cooperation and Culture in delivering that project. The fencing is the last bit, I think, that is to be undertaken. The lighting has been installed. And we have the Mondidon Wapata Court, which for years remained with no lighting and no fencing. So we got the fencing, and we have the lights, and the next thing that we have to do is to get the backboards for the youth up there, and I hope. And I understand that the Ministry of Youth and Sports has a very decent allocation for such activities. New road from the Mondidor to Carrollie, Mr. Speaker, that is a very effective road and another bypass, another getaway from the highway. So if you're coming out of Lacleri or from Castries, you drive through to Carrollie and up the block, up the Mondidor Hill, through to, you can turn right into Agard or left back onto the Balata Mondidor Road, and it will ease the difficulties that we face down there. Mr. Speaker, Union Hilltop, we need to attend to the potholes at the summit, otherwise we will completely lose that road. La Panse, Mr. Speaker, the old days of the UWP administration, it did not have the vision to construct a road from Lacleri through to La Panse, so they put a footpath. But we changed that, Mr. Speaker, and we have a road through Caribel and to Carasuites. And many people have forgotten that in the past you had to go through the ravine and up the steps, but today you have a proper bridge and there's proper access, and that has alleviated a lot of the problems during the construction of the road as the drainage program on the Chaussee Road. So the traffic diverted through to La Pante and through La Ferry. Yes. This is what we have done. But you know, Mr. Speaker, we don't go around shouting about these things because Jean-Pierre Ferrier, the same thing to do with the water situation at Acteville. You know, when you run a water pipeline, Mr. Speaker, people begin to get water at their homes. You don't see any construction anymore, so you're forgotten. So the government has done nothing for poor people. Government is not distributing the wealth that we've gained, and no trickle down of the $1 billion economy. It's all happening, Mr. Speaker. The time will come, sir, when we will know who is delivering and who is bluffing, Mr. Speaker. And so along those steps, yes, Stryker and others, we have some remedial work to do to protect the residents from runoff. And of course, Mr. Speaker, there's the section near Margaret at the bottom of Acteville. The footpaths in there, I will be looking to the Ministry of Social Transformation and PRF to assist us in rehabilitating those footpaths and putting retaining walls. Of course, Mr. Speaker, Castries North is a very diverse constituency, and of course we also have residents at PG, and of course we have an airport, JFL Airport. But there's a serious problem for traffic management in that area, and I again urge the police department to collaborate with the St. Lucia LNC Ports Authority in managing the traffic at the entrance to George F.L. Charles Airport. Mr. Speaker, this is a big problem. They have double and triple parking in those areas, and you will not see a single policeman in the area to deal with that traffic situation. The port policemen will say to me that they do not have jurisdiction outside of the port area, so they cannot go and interfere with the traffic. And the taxi drivers on the outside, the Seaside Taxi Association, they have really had it with that type of parking, and they are urging us to do something about it for them, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you can appreciate that this constituency, as I said earlier, is very diverse. It cuts across all the social spectrum and therefore requires varied forms of attention. I'm confident, Mr. Speaker, that in this year's allocations and with the support of my colleagues, ministers in the various ministries that develop on a lot of those capital programs, will work closely with the parliamentary representative for Castries North so that we can bring comfort and bring good representation to the people of Castries North, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, sir, again, I want to compliment and congratulate the Honourable Prime Minister for a job well done, and the staff in the Ministry of Finance. I believe we have some very brilliant technocrats in that ministry. And I work with the Minister for Finance in the subcommittee on budget. And I know that we have some good workers, we have some very good public servants. We want to thank them for the support that they have given to us. And the staff at the Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the farmers, and most of all, Mr. Speaker, the farmers and the fishers, and most of all, and importantly, Mr. Speaker, all the residents of Castries North, those who voted for me the last time and those who did not vote for me. And I expect this time, they will vote for me this time, Mr. Speaker. And of course, we will not have any races because we know that. So, Mr. Speaker, I know we are approaching the switching hour of the night when some of us have to, adopt some horizontal posture. So at this time, sir, I want to thank you and for this presentation.